Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground.
Hey, everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman with another edition of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show here at the Progressive Radio Network. Usually, over the past few months, we've been broadcasting our Zoom calls. This week, we have a fantastic. The Zoom calls are for the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition, of which we've done more than 50. And unfortunately, this week is a heck of a blow to us because the Supreme Court has just upheld some of the worst anti-democracy legislation ever passed in this country from the state of Arizona. We're going to talk with that with our magnificent guest. Couldn't be better. Laura Flanders, the truly great Laura Flanders, who has been on TV with the wonderful progressive talk for so long now. Laura, it's great to have you with us. It's an honor.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Harvey. Really, it is. Truly, that ruling last night is just so depressing. 6-3. Ay, ay, ay. We knew it was going to be bad with this term, but it's turning out to be pretty darn bad.
Well, these laws, and of course, this is part of the great struggle now in this country for democracy, which is the last bastion, you know, as we always knew, democracy. Is what really allows the world to go to some place where we can have justice and fight for our climate and do all the things we need to do. And the good news, of course, is that in this country, the forces of good, the forces of progress and change and justice and ecological sanity, we are in the majority. There is no doubt that if we had a true democracy in this country, we would have a very progressive government. You know, we've had all these years of the baby boom, which our generation really did change the culture in this country, but we've been unable to overturn the empire and the anti-democratic, puritanical, residual mess that is currently in power and that is doing everything it can to sustain that power. And it knows, we know, that they can't stay in power if there's a democratic system with a small d. Laura, your show, tell us about your show a bit before we jump into the content here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's totally relevant to what you're talking about because I, like you, believe that given our druthers, this country would be a pretty progressive place. You find that to be true when you travel outside of the cities. You find it to be true inside the cities. It depends how you approach an issue. What we talk about every week on the Laura Flanders Show are models, actionable models, not ideas, not pie in the sky, but things people are doing right now to shift power in the worlds of politics, arts, and economics. We feature economic models that are making a difference in communities, new approaches to public safety, public health. We were the first to cover the woman India Walton, who just got the nod in the Democratic primary to run as mayor of Buffalo. She actually launched her campaign, the socialist campaigner, on our on the day that our show about her and the land trust that she was heading up at the time premiered on public television in her city. We try to have our sort of eye on the prize and the news that's coming down the pike that's useful and inspiring, partly because I think people need models of alternatives and they need to believe that change is possible. Because what we hear in the money media all the time is, no, it can't be done. There is no alternative. Maybe it's that I grew up with Margaret Thatcher and I have just been determined to prove her wrong ever since. There is an alternative. In fact, there are many alternatives. We just need to cover them and maybe give people some insight. Not to say the challenges aren't huge, and we'll talk
Laura,
about that.
How do people get your show? How do people listen to your show?
Well, we're on TV. You can find us on your local public television station. We're on 270 public television stations. We premiere on about 170 of them every week on Sundays at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. But if you can't figure out where we are on the dial, simply join us on YouTube. We do a live premiere every Sunday at 11:30 and a live chat right afterwards. And then the show is there on our website. It's in our archives, also available as a radio show and as a podcast. So we try to get as much bang for the buck as we can. It's a tremendous privilege to be able to keep doing this work, independent, non-commercial, advertising-free, supported by our viewers and listeners and a few friendly foundations. It's exciting. It's important. And I can't keep up with all the stories there are out there for us to cover.
And what's your website so that people can go straight to the source?
Well, the website is lauraflanders.org, www.lauraflanders.org. This week we have a show coming up on Sunday all about the brouhaha around critical race theory and what's really at the heart of that. And you can find all our programming right there, audio, video, whichever you fancy, plus my commentaries. I write a commentary every 2 weeks, and the most recent is actually about that Buffalo race.
Yeah, this critical race theory is just another right-wing diversion. You know, I loved how they were screaming about censoring. The last round of BS from the right wing had to do with the cancel culture. They are the
right.
Cancel culture. And
don't forget the stolen election hoax. That was a pretty good BS package.
Yeah. Well, that one's still going. That's the big lie. Like that we're. I'm running around saying that Germany really won World War One. Now we're seeing the Trump cult saying that he really won the election. We know he didn't. Although I will say, and this is important to note, that the real reason that Donald Trump is not in the White House for a second and final term is that final meaning endless, that he would have made himself dictator for life, is that this election was conducted on paper ballots. And you and I, Laura, talked on your show about the desperate need for paper ballots, that was, as we saw in Ohio 2004, and I'm talking to you right now from Columbus, Ohio, where the 2004 election was stolen because they used electronic voting machines. And I say without any shadow of a doubt that had electronic voting machines predominated in the 2020 election, there is no doubt that Donald Trump would be in the White House today. It was only paper ballots, real democracy.
Another interesting aspect of that, Harvey, is, you know, the right is always very good at finding a weakness and exploiting it, and finding a fear that people have and exploiting it. And sometimes there is an element, or even more than an element, of good sense in the fears that people have. Namely, for example, the Trump administration's total exploitation of what in many places was a fairly well-reasoned concern about electronic voting and voting machines. They just, like they talk about, you know, stealing from, you know, benefiting the poor and taking power from the rich. They're just lying about what they will do. But they're speaking to a real concern that people have. And I think that was part of the frustration was, you know, Democrats also needed to talk honestly about voting machines. And then I think Trump would have had less ammunition to play with.
Well, as always happens, and your show was instrumental in helping us get the word out. Bob Fitrakis and I witnessed up close and personal in Columbus, Ohio, 2004, how the election was stolen. We were scoffed at by much of the liberal media, much of the progressive left would not deal with the reality of stolen elections. And, you know, as Gandhi said, first they laugh at you, then they attack you, and then you win. And had we not fought on your show and elsewhere, and on this show at Progressive Radio Network, for an end to electronic voting and a beginning of paper ballots, as I say, we would have an all-out right-wing fascist government in power today. I'm writing about this, by the way, Laura, I'm finally finishing a history of the United States that I've been working on for 50 years. It's called The People's Spiral of U.S. History, and I hope you and I can talk about it. I'm almost done with the thing.
The history just keeps on coming, right? How do you ever stop? Yes. When do you decide you're going to finish the book?
That's a good question. I'm going to finish it in time for our upcoming rallies, and I want you to know about this and all you listeners, those of you who have been following our Zoom calls, know about this, our Green Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom calls. But from August 27th through August 30th, we will be in Washington, D.C., with a very major march. Al Sharpton will be involved in the D.C. statehood movement. It's going to be a weekend of activity for D.C. statehood, green jobs, and justice. And we are going to be covering, of course, the issue of D.C. statehood with 700,000 people who do not have, American citizens who do not have a senator, two senators, or a congressperson. That happens to include my sister, niece, and nephew, by the way. And we will be in D.C. for rallies, marches, and on that Monday, August 30th, we will have a roundtable, and then we're going to have a rally in Lafayette Park, and we are going to deliver to the White House at least one solar panel. And we are demanding that the White House become a greenhouse and that we totally solarize the White House with panels on the rooftop, heat pumps, increased efficiency, batteries in the basement, the whole deal. And we're going to present the Biden administration with a plan, a very professional and doable plan, to make the White House 100% green energy, to be followed by making D.C., currently called the District of Columbia, we want to call it the Douglas Commonwealth, and make it 100% the first state to be 100% green energy. So, Laura, you are a true genius when it comes to democracy. Tell us what you think now about this horrendous set of Supreme Court decisions, 6-3, of course, and what they're going to mean for democracy and how we're going to have to fight back to get our right to vote secured.
Well, I don't think I'm a genius in democracy. If we had a few more geniuses in democracy, we might be better at fighting back these right-wing backlash assaults. I mean, this was a true defeat. It was a defeat. The majority ruling really undermines the last remnants of the Voting Rights Act and the rights that it was supposed to secure. It's, again, as you point out, making it harder for people to vote, making it more difficult to organize, to organize around protecting the vote and helping people get their votes in. As you know, one aspect of the decision had to do with an Arizona law that sends people to prison if they handle someone else's ballot. Now, that may sound, unclear, but if there are groups who are helping people who are housebound and have filled out their absentee ballots but just haven't been able to mail them back, those people who had the practice of gathering them and helping them get to the mailbox are now, violating this law, and that has been reaffirmed in this decision. It also makes it harder to register to vote. It makes it easier to purge voters from the rolls. And this is just one example. You also have that Georgia law that makes it illegal for political organizations to give out food and water to people waiting in line. I mean, you really laid it out at the very beginning. How does a minority win power and keep it in a democracy? This is what the right have figured out has to do. You do things like gin up fear at the local level, usually around something like race, gain local power, for example, at a school board, gain local state power, then you gerrymander, redistrict, and you're in charge of the state. How do you control the national discourse? You keep people entirely distracted and on the defensive so that the progressives who are elected never get anything done. Then in the meantime, you're busily making it more difficult for people to vote. So the democracy is made weaker and weaker and weaker. I mean, this is where we are, people. We have specifically, I think, a white minority that is looking at demographic change in this country and saying, we're not having it. And they are recreating a Confederacy in a sense. Through their attacks on voting rights, while they do all the other stuff that we just mentioned, the critical race theory, the brouhaha over basically a lie, and the controlling of the mechanism of voting wherever the hell they can, and then if all of that doesn't work, we mount a violent attack on the Capitol and on state government and even school board meetings. We interviewed a guy this week whose teacher, 16-year veteran high school teacher in Blountville, Tennessee, was voted to be fired by the school board. The one school board member who opposed this vote was then received death threats. And this guy we spoke to was a student of this man and said, Coach Hahn, talking about Matthew Hahn, the guy who was fired, was simply teaching the other side of the story. We get the Confederacy side. We get Confederacy race theory. What he was teaching was the other side of the story, the truth about white supremacy in America and the nation's founding. This is a town where outside the statue, the school statue is a statue of Robert E. Lee. This is a teacher who our guest, Kyle Simcox, said was just teaching love. You know, he changed the lives of a generation of kids who studied with him, including the man we spoke to, young white man, now an electrician, just brokenhearted that this man has been fired. And of course, the story is deeper than you get from the headlines. There's a change happening in the school district. They want to get rid of three schools, consolidate them into one. There are budget cuts. There are people that need to, you know, they want to get the teaching force shrunk, but they promised everybody they'd keep their job. So this is a way to lay off people. I mean, the story is always more complex when you actually report it locally. But hey, presto, we don't have local media anymore. So yeah. This stuff can all happen under the radar. I mean, it's exasperating.
We do have your media. We're talking to Great War of Flanders. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We have been, for the past year, mostly running these Zoom calls, the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition. Laura, you'd be welcome to come on our Zoom call, even for a few minutes. It would be good to have you on. And I'll send your staff the link. You will definitely be introduced. We have been covering the progress or the regression against democracy. My own book, History of the United States, People's Spiral of U.S. History, which is, I promise I will finish soon, certainly by August, is about to show that it was not only the Confederacy, but really the root of reaction in this country comes from Puritan Boston in 1630, when these horrible right-wing, witch-burning, heathen-hating Puritans came to America and ran smack up against the indigenous culture. One of the things that we have to understand in this country, Warren, I'm sure you know, is that the real root of American democracy is with the indigenous and with matriarchy. And what I am advocating, and of which you are a shining example, is that women really need to take over. We need a matriarchy.
Well, some women. Don't forget, I mentioned Margaret Thatcher earlier. We need to make sure we keep an eye on which one.
Well, she and I used to go out together, you know, but we couldn't talk about politics, and we had to break up. So what can I tell you? We are here at PRN. We are thrilled for the support of the station. Thank you to the crew in New York. And Laura Flanders, I don't know how you do it. You're with my great buddy, Rory O'Connor, who is one of the ancient stalwarts. I hate to use the word ancient, but we are getting there, of the movement against nuclear power. One of the things that just happened in this past week, and I have a piece about this at Reader Supported News, is this collapse of the condo in Florida really is a terrifying omen for the nuclear power industry, because we have these reactors all over the country that are equally old, badly maintained. The concrete is deteriorating, and here you have a condo. This was no ordinary condo, by the way. This is a very, very expensive condo. These units in these condos were $1 million-plus. This condo that collapsed. And I look at that picture of the collapsed condo, and I see a nuclear power plant. And there are four of them in South Florida. And you and I also have talked about this on your show. We did, in your neighborhood, thankfully, just shut the Indian Point reactor. Unit 3 is done, and so the whole Indian Point complex is done. And one of the things we're pushing at this rally at the end of August in D.C. And why, by the way, we choose the date, Laura, because of the anniversary of the King speech. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech was August 28th, 1963. So this will be the 58th anniversary. But one of the big revolutions that we're also attempting to have in this country is to convert 100% to renewables. And you talk about this a lot, especially with Rory O'Connor on your staff. What's your take on what's happening with renewables now?
Well, you know, I mean, I think we have to keep our eye on the prize here. I mean, they are looking at sea level rise also as part of the picture of what happened in that condo unit. And one of the key pieces of the platform of that Biden was elected on was a plank having to do with a major Green New Deal climate measure investment program. You look at the bipartisan infrastructure bill, and the lack of climate measures is blinding. This is a moment where we, all of us, have been pushing for a major investment in a real culture shift in this country around energy, around climate. And of course, they're connected. And we're not seeing it in Washington. And in Washington, we're not seeing it. And we're not seeing it at the local level as much as possible, as much as we need to. It's very hard. Even when you have a progressive mayor, and I know you're going to talk with Dennis Kucinich, he can talk about some of the obstacles he was up against, you know, decades ago. Courageous man, he's running again. He clearly believes there's still a chance. But there's certainly a requirement that we get very serious about upgrading, changing our infrastructure, changing our energy diet, our energy practices, and taking a very serious look at nuclear is obviously a part of that. But, you know, my real concern is that the conversation, or not the conversation, the demand that came out of our COVID experience, and that's not over, by the way, but the demand that came out of last year, which is that we reprioritize care, community, society, human life, people, planet, health, and take a look, a long, hard, painful look at what only pursuing property, the interests of property and profit, have brought us, that demand that couldn't have been louder in that period of COVID, and that fueled in no small measure Biden-Harris's victory, is not being heard in this moment. And there is, I'm afraid that people are doing what we've seen progressives do in the past, although the right tends not to do it, which is a kind of looking away. After the elections happen, we'll leave it up to our electeds in Washington. Well, we can't afford to. They're talking about selling off the infrastructure to private companies and the substitution of public taxes for corporate taxes, meaning corporations charging us for use of, quote-unquote, their roads, their toll systems, their you know, parking meters. I mean, again, Kucinich knows about this from years back. But, you know, this is the moment that we're in, I think. If we had anticipated where we would be today a year ago, if we had said, look, Trump's defeated by millions of votes, we expand the electorate by millions of voters, we elect a biracial, really multiracial administration that brings in more women and people of color, and indigenous people are heading up the Department of Interior, and then we come out with this infrastructure package, we would say, no, that's, you know, that's not at all what we have in mind. We can't afford privatization in the name of infrastructure investment. We've tried that. We need more oversight. We need more local control. We need more democracy and a change in priorities. And I think that's what we're going to hear coming out of Miami. It's already what we're hearing, but people are still hoping that there are lives to be saved. But I think very much about the collapsed, or the fire in London, in a sort of a low-income housing property that a few years back mobilized a massive movement around housing in London. And we need to see something similar here. This can't just be seen as a, you know, one bad developer. We have a system that needs changing and a set of priorities that have got to be overhauled.
Right on, Laura Flanders. Your shows are fantastic, and it's a joy and an honor to have you with us. We'll be joined soon, quickly, by Dennis Kucinich, who's got a new book out and who's running for mayor of Cleveland. You're welcome to stay with us. One thing, you know, in the change of that's come to this country, and this wasn't true 50 years ago, but we have the luxury of working for democracy, knowing that the vast body of the country has really moved to the left. You know, the baby boomers did their thing on the culture, and now we have millennials and their Zoomer siblings who are very much they hated Trump. And if you look at the maps of the country, if only millennials and Zoomers had voted in 2016 and 2020, I mean, Trump would have gotten less than 200 electoral votes. It's quite a huge shift. And this is why democracy itself has become such an issue. And the irony is that the same is now true of energy. If we had a flat out a perfect market in energy, and only the technologies that are cheap, clean, safe, and reliable, but also cheap in terms of the market, we're pushing ahead, we would have solar overnight. I mean, renewable energy, yeah. Wind, solar, batteries, increased efficiency, and now electric cars, they are winning in the marketplace. You know, it's a great irony.
Yeah, and once they are there...
Yeah, go ahead.
There's been some interesting reporting out of The Guardian in the UK about the tipping point that happens. As soon as electric cars become the same price or a little cheaper than their gasoline fossil fuel equivalent, the flip is exponential. Like we can see instantaneous change in countries like Denmark, I think was the country in question, where as soon as that price point changed, you saw a massive shift. I'm trying to remember what the number was, but it wasn't incremental. It was exponential. You saw the numbers shift in terms of what cars were being bought and what cars were being driven. This is a change that can happen quickly if we can bring the prices down, if we can make the price of the product competitive. I'm sorry that price is the impetus, is the stimulus, but of course that's inevitable. But it doesn't take much to flip this switch. We just have to do it, and that's what I think many of us were hoping this moment might look like. A lot of switches getting flipped around.
No, absolutely.
Putting our money where our mouths are.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, I actually have been in the solar and the wind business. I have participated in two commercial deals where we solarized two houses, and there are tax credits involved, but only because tax breaks are going to what I call King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas. If you remove the tax breaks, and I'm actually in a position now of advocating that we remove all tax breaks for all energy, because if the tax breaks were removed for coal, oil, nukes, and gas, solar would immediately take over, even without the subsidies. We're talking with the great Laura Flanders, whose shows are all over the internet and on TV. It's amazing you, Laura, have been able to spread your very progressive views throughout so much of the media world. It's a very impressive accomplishment, and we're really
happy.
Well,
thank you. I appreciate that. And you go to our website, lauraflanders.org. I'm actually going to do it while I'm talking to you so I can tell your listeners what station the show is actually on. But there's a handy-dandy little device or a search mechanism on the site where you can put in your zip code and figure out where you can watch the show. We've put a lot of effort into getting on public television. What's your zip code, Harvey? I'll tell you whether there's a station near you.
I'm in Los Angeles, 91607, and we're joined by the great Dennis Kucinich. So,
okay, very good. I'll look when you join. You greet Dennis, and I'll find the station for you.
You are welcome to stay with us. Dennis Kucinich, great to have you with us. How are you, Dennis? Dennis, can we hear you?
I am here. Thank you.
Hey, Dennis. I am here, too. I'm actually right now broadcasting from Columbus, Ohio, where you and I first met. You were a state senator way back in the day. You came in from your district in Cleveland, and an astounding turn of events. We jumped right into a battle over a radioactive waste dump, which we won, and we could not have won without you. We stopped this radioactive waste dump because you, Dennis Kucinich, were a state senator. You then turned around and used that perch to run for the U.S. Congress. How many terms, Dennis Kucinich, did you serve in the U.S. Congress?
Well, I served a total of 16 years, 8 terms. But I want to tell you that that fight that we had to block nuclear waste from coming into Ohio, from Iowa, Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, Missouri, was so important to this state. And as we proved at that point, it would have poisoned our water table. It would have made Ohio radioactive, but the people promoting it didn't care about that. They were just looking for a place to dump nuclear waste. So I'm glad that we were able to work together on that one. And, of course, now with my new book, The Division of Light and Power, nuclear power actually finds a center stage on that with that book, and we can get into it in a moment.
Yes, and I wanted to say, if you're still with us, Laura Flanders, say hi to the great Dennis Kucinich.
Hey, great Dennis Kucinich. How are you? It's a long time
Laura,
since we've spoken, but it's
been
wonderful
to feel
you on the other end of the line.
I appreciate the interviews that we've done over the years, and it's good to be with both you and Harvey.
Congrats
on
the book.
Laura was going to tell me what station I can find her on in Los Angeles. And then
okay, so in, very quickly,
your...
in Los Angeles, you can find us on KCET, and in Columbus, you can find us on WOSU, Public Television in Columbus, Ohio. So I don't
All
want
right.
you to skip over, though, in your conversation with Dennis Kucinich, his term as mayor of Cleveland, which was super important when it came to standing up for public power. And that's the fight that we are having again in Washington right now around the privatization of energy and infrastructure. And I just want to all hail Dennis for being not just one of the youngest mayors I think in this country's ever seen, but one of the most important and far-sighted back in the early days. The woman that we just reported on, India Walton, who, as I mentioned earlier, just won the primary in a big upset victory against a four-term incumbent in Buffalo, is the kind of young, socialist, far-sighted, African-American mom of four nurse mayoral candidate
right.
that I think is walking in the steps of Dennis. He'd be very proud.
Well, Dennis really opened the door for the importance of being a mayor. And, you know, you shook the world, Dennis. Your book, The Division of Power and Light, which I've been reading, is spectacular. And, of course, we shared your incredible victory for saving the Muni Light Company. And as someone who spent so many years in Ohio, it's impossible to overstate the importance of how you saved that Muni Light Company. And now, with you going back to become mayor again, hopefully we can see a totally green Cleveland. So let's talk about that. Also, I want to take this opportunity, Dennis, to invite you. We are doing a major demonstration, series of activities on the last weekend of August. It's the anniversary of the King's Speech in D.C. It's the Dream March for D.C. Statehood, Green Jobs, and Justice. And I want to officially invite both of you to come down to speak at this. And Dennis, you have officially announced that you're running for mayor again, and you've got your book out. So tell us about both of those great things in your life.
Well, they're two separate but obviously interrelated pursuits. I started working on the Division of Light and Power in November of 1979, just after I left office. But the events, as the reader will discover, were so searing and mind-blowing, and an entire city was gaslighted by an electric company and the media, if you can forgive the mixing of metaphors. And we ended up in a situation that it was so twisted and explosive. I was so close to the story, I couldn't write it. Now, years later, I wrote one draft after another. The book that is on sale right now is the seventh draft that I started in,
sounds like my latest
2018.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I started in 2018, and I didn't stop until I finished it at the beginning of this year. So, you know, it begins when I'm a young, newly elected councilman, age 23, and I get in the city council, and immediately I start to see evidence of this utility, the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company, interfering with our municipal electric system, being involved in corporate espionage, sabotage, trying to, playing with the finances of the city to try to soften the city up for a sale of our municipal electric system. And it's, it's a wild story, but everything is true. It's all documented, Harvey.
Well, yeah, you are a truth teller. There's no doubt about that. And you brought tremendous change to Cleveland. It's entertaining and infuriating to read how you walked in as a 23-year-old kid and confronted all these old, cigar-chomping, backroom corrupt polls, POLS, at the Cleveland City Council, and then got yourself elected mayor. How old were you when you got elected mayor?
I was 31 when I was elected mayor of Cleveland. I was America's youngest mayor of any big city at the time. And as soon as I was elected mayor on a promise to save our municipal electric system, which had been sold by the previous mayor, and I started a campaign to block the sale, and that was instrumental in my being elected mayor, because people did not want to get rid of the muni-light system, even though there was tremendous pressure from the corporate community, the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company, the banks, the media, both political parties. Because remember, I was elected as an independent. And it became the central issue of my administration, because the banks were in and particularly Cleveland Trust Bank at the time, they were in a life and death struggle with our administration over trying to use their economic power to force us to sell the electric system. And you got to trace it back, Harvey, to the fact that the bank was a business partner with CEI. And in addition to that, the bank was involved in financing CEI. And you have to remember, CEI had two nuclear power plants that they had built or were building that were neither used nor useful once they were completed. But the bill for construction kept growing, and they were in financial trouble with the nuclear power program. And so they needed to have more customers. They needed many lights customers. Not only so they could have a monopoly in Cleveland, but also so they could raise everybody's rates to help pay off their rising nuclear power plant bills.
Yeah, and executives paid, which is now First Energy. The more things change, the more they stay the same. These guys pay themselves huge amounts of money. Of course, now in Ohio, we've had this bribery case. $61 million bribe went to the $61 million. Let me repeat that. $61 million went to the Speaker of the Ohio House. They just finally got rid of the guy. We have been advocating for decades, Dennis, that the Cleveland could be 100% powered by wind energy, wind turbines in the lake, wind turbines along the North Coast, with the muni buying the power. What does that look like when you come in as mayor?
Well, first of all, there is this thing about having to win an election.
Yeah.
But I certainly favor transiting Cleveland to green energy. Right now, we're locked in an absolutely abhorrent contract through AmpOhio, which contracted with the Prairie State Energy Campus, which ended up freezing Cleveland's municipal electric plant into a long-term take-or-pay contract that has been so onerous that it has caused Muni Light's rates for the first time in its history to be higher than the Cleveland Electric Company. And so I have to straighten that out, but green energy is going to be one way that we demonstrate to the people of Cleveland that we can continue to clean our environment and can have the power that we need to move our economy forward. And Cleveland has a lot of benefits right now. I mean, we're on the lake area, the largest chain of Great Lakes in the world, fresh water, that is. And we're really in good shape as far as the future, as long as our sources of energy become greener, and I'm certainly committed to that.
Well, good for you. We're talking with the great Dennis Kucinich, author. His new book is The Division of Power and Light, detailing his amazing career, 8-term congressperson, a former state senator that helped in a 2-year slot defeat a hugely devastating proposed radioactive waste dump, and now on path to becoming mayor again of Cleveland. Dennis, what are your primary principal barriers to becoming mayor again, and what's your campaign look like?
Well, as always, because I'm not taking money from corporate interests, it's fundraising. And, our campaign is located at www.kucinich.com. Let me tell you.
Laura, you can jump in. You want to ask Dennis a question? Laura Flanders.
I have a couple of questions for Dennis. I mean, one, while we're talking about mayors, I'm sure you're aware of this young woman, India Walton, who just won this Democratic primary in Buffalo, running on a socialist platform and running as a registered nurse, somebody who had headed up a land trust in her neighborhood because the local hospital that she worked in was so gentrifying the local neighborhood that people like herself couldn't afford even a basic rent on a good living. This is an amazing person.
Dennis,
I happen to know
this woman ran as a socialist. Are you running in the Democratic primary, or are you running independent again? What is the nature of your campaign here?
Cleveland's primary is nonpartisan, so there is no partisan designation. Before, when I was elected mayor, there was a partisan designation. There is not now. And so but beyond that, I mean, I'm a Democrat, and, my feeling is that political parties, unless they address the practical aspirations of people for a clean environment, clean air, clean water, safe energy, safe community, decent housing, jobs, good wages. When a political party does that, it's easy to work with. But I haven't seen that as the hallmark of any political party.
My question for you, Dennis, was just she's now up against a lot of powers that be, and the demand she defeated is running a write-in campaign. She did run in the Democratic primary. Any advice? Can you talk a little bit about how did you withstand the pressure that came at you and work against it?
Well, the pressure was like stepping into a vise. It just kept tightening and tightening. And I think it starts with this. If you go into public life and you don't really want anything except to serve, you're going to be fortified by your ethical base. If you want something, if you want another office, if you want something financially for yourself, got it. So for me, I was able to withstand the pressure because I came to public life with an ethical code, with a set of values and a belief in that there is such a thing as a soul, and I wasn't going to give it up to please someone who professed to have extraordinary amounts of money, and they indicated a passing interest in my career. I had no interest in that kind of materiality. I'm interested in ideas. I'm interested in improving people's lives. And if somebody can give me an idea that can help do that, I'm all for it. I'm also interested in economic justice and social justice. And those are things that are, eternal verities that one must stand for if you're in public life, if you really care about people. So, I was probably the wrong person for the corporations to try to pressure.
So, Dennis, when is your primary, and then when is the general in Cleveland?
The primary is September 14th. Absentee ballot starts a month earlier, so it's not that far away. We're talking about an election where people begin voting, applying for their absentee ballots, and voting by mail in about 6 weeks. So. September 14th is the primary when they count up all the votes. November 2nd is the general election. And I can tell you.
What kind of As you know, we're conducting, I've been involved with the election protection movement for 20 years, and we conduct, and I want to invite you, as I've invited Laura, onto our Zoom call, which usually fills the slot. The Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Zoom call happens Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern time, and you would be welcome, as well as Laura is, to come on for a few minutes and say hi and make sure that we know what's going on in Cleveland. What kind of challenges are you facing to get a fair election now in Cleveland? I know it's still part of Ohio, and God knows the mess in Ohio that the legislature is creating over elections is miserable. What are you looking at in Cleveland to get a fair Democratic election, small d?
Right. Well, first of all, Harvey and Laura, let me say that Cleveland has had one of the lowest turnouts in any big city in the country, not only with respect to federal elections, but also with respect to local elections. People are so disenchanted with government, they just don't feel it's worth voting anymore. And it becomes of great significance because there's such a high poverty rate in Cleveland. And people, with poverty comes a certain amount of social disorganization that makes it difficult to understand that voting is central to one's deliverance from the underclass. If you, in fact, vote, you may be able to help create circumstances that can lift everyone up. So in this election, we are certainly going to be having witnesses to the count, challengers if we need to. But the biggest problem in Cleveland is just getting people out to vote who are already registered. And, of course, I stand with you in challenging any kind of laws that come out of the state legislature which would inhibit people's right to vote. But, you know, there's another level to this discussion, Harvey and Laura, where people are franchised through government's not paying attention to any of their basic concerns, and then they just say, what's the use in voting? And when we get to that place, that's kind of where we are in Cleveland.
Well, will you be having a paper ballots in Cleveland? How's that going to work? We have a history in Cleveland of serious problems with electronic voting machines. What's the modus operandi for this upcoming election?
I think we're looking at voting machines. There are seven candidates running for mayor, and we're quite possible. I think we're looking at voting machines, and we're going to be there to check all the machines and to make sure the tabs are sealed. And certainly, with the kind of knowledge that you have, Harvey, in being all over this issue for decades now, I'd certainly be interested in talking to you once I have some final definition as to the manner in which they're going to gather the votes and count them.
Yeah, so, Bob Patrakis and I have written six or seven books about it in Ohio alone, and a lot of it has centers on Cleveland and the problems with with these voting machines, which we have referred to basically as touch and pray. And, face-based voting or vote counts has been a serious problem. So I'm hoping that maybe we can talk and see what we can do by getting more paper ballots in Cleveland. As we have put forth at our election protection Zooms, the only reason that Donald Trump is not in the White House for a second and terminal term is because of the 2020 election was conducted almost entirely on paper. And, Dennis, I hope to God that we can guarantee a fair election for your campaign. We know, of course, that the big money is going to be out to stop you.
Yeah. Harvey, I want to ask one other question of Dennis before you let him go. On one other
real
topic, am I allowed?
Yeah, real quick,
just
we're
because
almost out of time.
Here's a man who has run for high office so many times on a peace platform. I got to ask you, what are you making of the way that Donald Rumsfeld's being remembered? All too much kind of cutesy Mr. Magoo avuncularism in the obituaries and commentary so far, I find.
There's a Latin phrase, something like, forgive me, Sister Justicia, nihil nisi bonum est. And I think it says, it translates to, it's better to only speak. And I'm going to stay with that. I'm not going to say anything about this passing. God rest his soul.
Dodge for you.
As the only major American a member of government to have hugged Saddam Hussein, I think we can give some. By the way, Donald Rumsfeld bought a farm. Donald Rumsfeld is the guy who got aspartame legalized, and he was paid $15 million to do that. And then he used that money, and he bought the plantation in Maryland where Frederick Douglass was whipped as a child. So I'll leave it at that. I want to, again, invite both of you to our major rally at the end of August in Washington, D.C., the Dream March for D.C. Statehood, Green Jobs, and Justice. And we will be commemorating the King's speech, the I Have a Dream speech. We're going to be, and Dennis, I don't know if you heard this, but we are going to be presenting plans to the Biden administration to make the White House into a greenhouse, to make it 100% based on renewable. Maybe you can do that to Cleveland City Hall once you get into the mayor's seat again.
Well, your book, Dennis, I would love to work with you on that, Harvey. Laura, thank you. Harvey, thank you.
Get your book, Dennis? Real quick, where do we get your book?
You can go Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, check with them. You can buy it online through any number of search engines. Just type in Division of Light and Power, and it'll pop up. And it's worth a read, especially when the American Rescue Plan money runs out. There'll be a new wave of attempted privatizations. This book will tell people how to protect their communities and how to fight back.
And how do people get to you to support your candidacy for mayor?
Go to Kucinich.com, KUCINICH.com, and you just follow the directions on the website. Harvey, thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you. Laura, good to join with you again, and I look forward to.
And Dennis, you are also
absolutely
invited to.
I look forward to interviewing you as mayor. And if people want to see more coverage of progressive mayors and others all around the country, check out Laura Flanders' show at lauraflanders.org or WOSU right there in Columbus.
Okay. Hey, man, what an action-packed show. It's been great to have you both on. This is Harvey Slogo Wasserman. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show on the Progressive Radio Network. We have been running for the past year, mostly our grassroots emergency election protection Zoom calls. You can join us, grassroots emergency election protection Zoom calls at electionprotection2024.org. We are mourning a horrible decision from the U.S. Supreme Court allowing a major repression of our electoral process. And we are working night and day to stop it. I also want to tell you that I've been working on my history of the United States now for 50 years, and I'm almost done. It is called The People's Spiral of U.S. History. I will have it out in August. I had to wait until the 2020 election to make sure that the stake was driven through, if it had a heart, the Trump administration. And now we're facing the ultimate challenges to our democracy. You guys in New York, thank you so much for keeping the show going. And I want to say, in addition, that and all of you out there who want to work on election protection, which is the primary issue we face, the good news is that if small-d democratic elections are actually held in this country, the public is with us. We have very strong democracy, democratic, small-d democratic majorities now, for the protection of our democracy, for the protection of our environment, for the conversion to 100% renewables. All these things are possible, as you have been hearing over the years on this show, the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. And what we have to do now, despite the Supreme Court, despite these gerrymandered legislatures, is to win these victories and to protect the vote. Laura Flanders' show is one place that we can do it. And Dennis Kucinich becoming mayor of Cleveland would also be a gigantic leap forward. His book, The Division of Light and Power, is terrific. So get them both. Contact me directly, if you like, at solartopia@gmail.com. S-O-L-A-R-T-O-P-I-A @gmail.com. And we will be back next week on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show at PRN. We will not resume on Zoom for another week. So next week we will also have a live show with great guests. And we will be talking about things like burying the nuclear power industry and converting to 100% renewables. So we're going to go out with the song. The Solartopia song with the great Pete Seeger, Dar Williams, and David Burns. This has been Harvey Sluggo Wasserman with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Hour at the Progressive Radio Network. Contact me again if you like, solartopia@gmail.com, and we'll see you next week at the Progressive Radio Network.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got...